We are holding on Ian Dowlett on the Bay's third line. We're still in the middle of the topic of Bissell, which came in, of course, through the fact that we had an omniscient case where you have an animal that is Chayav Mitzah, an animal that has to be somehow, for one reason or another, has to be put to death, a Shor HaNitzkol or a Chatas HaMeisah, got mixed up with Korbanos, and we were dealing with all the ins and outs of Bissell as it relates to that and as it relates to related cases. So another din in this connection. Amar Shlokish. Chavis shel truma shenis arba b'mei chavis. If one barrel of truma, so before we were talking about Avodah Zarah, and earlier than that we were talking about other Yisrael Hanan, now we're talking about truma, which of course is only author to Kohen, which is only author to Yisrael and Levim, not Christ. So if one barrel of truma shenis arba b'mei chavis, it got mixed in with 100 other barrels. No, we didn't. We didn't.
Not in the Snafsetta, but in another Snafsetta.
We had similar cases involving Yayin Nesach, where I don't think we had a specific case like this involving Truma. Now, the point is, normally Truma is Bottle 1 in 100. That's the, even Midaraita, as we said the other day, you only need 1 in 2. Midrabanan, when it comes to Truma, you need 1 in 100. So for that reason, that ought to be enough to be Mavakalit, except for the fact that when we had before the Mishnah from Orla that listed 6 things according to Chachamim, or 7 according to Rav Akiva, that are never bottled, and one of them was Chavis Truma, sealed barrels of wine or other liquid. So here we're talking about sealed barrels. Those are never bottled. So they're always
okay.
That's what we said, they're never bottled. So now, even though you have 1 fell into 100, nevertheless, it's not bottled. So you would have a problem. All of it would be also to Yisraelim. It would only be mutter to Kohenim. What you would have, if that were the case, if we stopped over there, what would happen is that you would say you have to sell the entire batch of 101 barrels. You sell it to Kohenim at the price of Truma, the price of Truma being cheaper than the price of Kohen, because only Kohenim can eat it and it has to be eaten Batara, etc. You sell for the price of 100 barrels of Cholin, because the 101st barrel is Truma. You can't sell it for the Kohenim. It belongs to them. But that's how you would have to do. But in this case, the wrinkle is the Nafla Akasan Yamamelach. Then what happened is one of the barrels then fell into the Yamamelach, into the Dead Sea. Shitimokobetus changes it to the Yamagodol, to the Mediterranean Sea, like we had on Omar Aleph. Some of them approach and talk about. Because on the face of it, the reason is because the usual way we say it is that it fell into the Yamagodol. It doesn't specifically have to fall into the Yamamelach, the Dead Sea. It just has to fall in some place where you're not going to find it again. Halachically, it would be the same thing, right? But we have a couple of Achronim, I think, who talk about nuances over there that maybe when it came to rings over there, because they're small, it was enough that it fell into the Yamagodol. Whereas over here, because we're talking about barrels, which are bigger, maybe therefore that's why the Gemara says Yamamelach, because if it's in the Yamagodol, conceivably you might find it. Okay, whatever, anyway. Hutru Kulon. Says Resh Lakish, all of the barrels now become mutter. Jamrin and half the Nuffle being sort of Nuffle, because we say, similar to what we said yesterday, that the one that we can assume that the one that fell in is the original one that is the one of Isser, the one of Truma, and therefore that's it. All the rest of them are Mutter. Similar logic to what we said before.
No,
but that was when we said as long as it's in there, that it's not possible. But here we're talking about Kol Departish, but here we're talking about the rule of Kol Departish, Midover Partish. That when one of them falls out, we assume that it fell out of the majority. Same as we talked before about when the animals scatter, then we could say about any of them called the Partish, Middle of the Partish, and we said it was only because of Xera not to do that. But over here, that doesn't apply. So therefore, we can say that the one that fell in is the one of Esther, and therefore the rest of them are Muslim. Which is similar to what we had on Amud Aleph as far as the din involving the ring. We had a similar thing over there of Nachman saying that if you had a ring of Avodah Zarah that fell into a bunch of other rings, and then one of them fell into the Yamagodol, we said also by the same logic, all of them are Mutter.
Because?
The same idea. We said that we can assume that the one that fell in is the one that fell out and fell into the sea is the original one of Isser that fell in. And we said we associated that with Rabbi Eliezer's opinion over there about the heads of the Korbanos with one where you have one Balmum mixed in there, where Rabbi Eliezer says that as long as one of them was offered on the Mizbeach or two according to the Rambam, then the rest of them are Mutter. So even though the Halacha is not like Rabbi Eliezer, we still said that Rav still follows that basic underlying principle. And in fact, some of the Mefarshim say that it might be that...
In essence, we're saying it's
Russell. No, we're not. No, not absolutely not. Fossil would mean that it loses its identity. Nothing's losing its identity. We're saying Kol Departa Shmir Dovah Parish. The one that fell out, we can assume, we're allowed to assume that the one that fell out is the original one that fell in that made it also in the first place.
Incredibly unlikely.
It might be incredibly unlikely, but there still is that possibility. We still have what to be Toilah. We still have what to be that was what drove the whole discussion before. We have reason to be Toilah that that's the case. So again, even if in the case of the Karbonis, we don't say, like Rabbi Yezer, as we talked about yesterday, Tosfos and Shitim Kubetis talk about the Chachamim may disagree with him on other grounds. There's also the point that some of the Mekoshim talk about over there, you're talking things Daraisa. Here, ultimately, we're talking about things Rabbanim, because again, the Daraisa, all you need is one and two to be Bato. You don't need one and 100. You don't need
that.
Fine. Okay, but that's fine. But the point still remains that this concept that we're saying, that it's not Bato, that the barrel is not bottle, and therefore you need one of them to fall out, that whole concept is only Dirabon. On top of that, also, we're talking about Truma, because Truma itself nowadays, according to many opinions, is only Dirabon. So therefore, based on all of that, then we can say that the one that fell in is the one of Issus. The truth is, now, the Yerushalmi actually mentions that Rabbi Yochanan disagrees with Rish Lakish on that. And because of that, because of other considerations, including the fact that we said that this whole thing only goes according to Rabbi Yezer, for that reason, the Ravid argues the Rambam, who brings this halacha, and the Ravid says, obviously not, the halacha can't possibly be like this, because it would be according to Rabbi Yezer, and because we find that Rabbi Yochanan disagrees with Rish Lakish.
And usually
we go according to Rabbi Yochanan against Rish Lakish. So the Noisa Kalim on the Rambam answer, the Chesed Mishnah, the Radvaz, answer that no, first of all, our Gemara doesn't mention Rabbi Yochanan's opinion, so therefore, very nice, the Yerushalmi mentions it, but obviously the Bavli didn't consider that there's a Machlokes, and therefore we go according to the Bavli versus the Yerushalmi, as we usually do. Second of all, as far as Rabbi Yezer versus the Chachamim, again, we can say Daraisa versus the Rabbanim. Rabbi Yezer is talking about the heads of Korbanos, we're offering them on the Mizbeach as an issue Daraisa. Daraisa, not to be massive about Muman on the Mizbeach, whereas here we're dealing with issues of Dittel, which mostly are Dirabanim. And on top of that, we're talking about Shurma, which itself is only Dirabanan. Okay.
So the Dirabanan will make you.
That's the point.
But if already we stand that we make you, why don't we just say, let's be make you and accept that?
No, because the fact is we have rules. We can't say that a sealed barrel is not bottle. One of the six or seven things that are not bottle. But here we're not talking about Dittel. Here we're talking Kol Departa Shmir Dovah Parish. That's a different rule. That we can do.
Parish,
that anything, any individual thing that came out of the that came out of the group, we can consider it came out of the majority. The majority of the group is not also because you only have one barrel of truma in 100 barrels of colon, and therefore statistically, we can say that, or no, the other way around. Actually, here's the opposite of called the parish, middle of the parish. Rather, what we're saying is half the nuffle, the sort of nuffle. Statistically, it's unlikely because it's only one out of 101 that is that particular one. But nevertheless, there is that possibility, and that's enough for us to be makele. That's what we're saying. The Gemara points out that it's just that I'm not going to... That's the rule. It's not called a parishment over parish. It's another rule called half the nuffle, the sort of nuffle, that we can assume the one that fell out is the one of Issur that originally fell out.
The one that fell out?
The Issur Nuffle is the one of Issur that fell out. Is the one of Issur that fell out. Mind you, when it came to the rings, by the way, that Amman fasts and you need two of them to fall out, here that Amman only fasts and you need one. So that Advaz deals with a number of possibilities why that should be. Among them are, again, because they were talking about Azara, which is more stringent, here we're talking about Truma, a couple of other reasons. One of the other reasons that Advaz gives is because the rings, conceivably, you might end up using them all at once, because there's nothing preventing you from selling all the rings at once, or just the opposite, actually, selling them all at once, or whatever, as opposed to the barrels of wine. You can't drink that many barrels of wine at once, necessarily. But you're not using, nobody's drinking them all at once. And therefore, there's more reason to be makele with only one fella. The Gemara says, the Itzirchter of Nachman, the Itzirchter of Shlokish. We needed Reb Nachman's din about the rings, where he said a similar thing, that when one ring or two rings, according to the Rambam, fell into the Yama Gadol, then the rest of them are Moser. And we also need Reb Shlokish's din. They're not repetitive. The image of Reb Nachman, because if we only had Reb Nachman's din, have Amina, then you would say, Tanimili, Avarit Sechavim. Fine, but that applies by Avodah Zarah to Eilam Asirin, because Avodah Zarah never becomes mutter. There's no way to be master of Avodah Zarah. Therefore, we have reason. Therefore, because if you're not gonna find some way to,
if it's a
with noy, as the case may be. But the point is, there's no easy way. So there's no real way to be master it. And fine, even there is a concept of bittul that only applies if you learn to Avodah Zarah. It's not like Tekrovis. It's Tekrovis, you can't have bittul either. But even if it was noy Avodah Zarah, that only works until it came into the hands of a yid. Once it comes into the hands of a yid, then there's no bittul anymore. So then it would be there's never any hetcher for it. So therefore, you would think that maybe therefore the chachamim allow you to be makel, because otherwise you're going to have to destroy all the rings. Avol truma the yesh lamasirin, but truma after all there is a hetcher. Koyanim can eat it after all, and you can sell all these barrels to koyanim. They're not going to go to waste. It just means you have to sell them at a cheaper price, but you still yeah. Eight lois, you would think maybe we're machmir, and say therefore that we're not going to allow if one fell out for you to drink the rest when it comes to truma. The imid did a shlokish. On the other hand, if we only had your shlokish's din, you would say habam el chavis. Then you would think fine, but that din only applies when it comes to one barrel falling out. The minker and if you lost a barrel is a big thing, so it's noticeable when it's missing from the group. Avol habas the minker and if you lost. So when it comes to a ring, you don't notice so much. It's not an obvious noticeable difference between a pile of 99 rings and 100. The Laminker and the philosophy, you don't notice as much as it fell out. So you would think maybe if you master it, people are likely to be mastered even if nothing fell out, which would be a problem. Therefore, you would think Loi. Therefore, we need both this. So it applies equally well to small things like rings and large things like barrels, and it applies equally well to Avodah Zarah and to Truma. That's why we need both this. Okay. Omer Rava. So Rava says further in this connection, this that Rish Lakish though is saying, if mutter indeed only applies to a barrel, the minker and philosopher, because as he just said, a barrel or a big thing, when it falls out, it's noticeable. I will say no low, but if we were talking about a pile of figs, the tain is figs. If you have a pile of figs, then not. Meaning that now you have two understandings among the Rishonim about what's going on over here. One way of looking at it, Rashi implies, and the Rambam says more straight out, that we're talking about that it fell into 100. So we're talking about that you have the, now, once it falls into 100, again, it's bottle. Figs are not one of the things, not one of the double sugar minions, so therefore it can be bottle 1 in 100. However, what we're saying over here is like this. When Truma falls into Kulin and becomes bottle, you do have to take out one and give it to the Kohen. Not necessarily is it going to be the same one that fell in, but the point is, anyone. But the reason why you have to do that is because, after all, Truma belongs to the Kohen. Like this, if you didn't give them anything, you'd be depriving them of their Truma. So therefore, you have to take... What?
Give them one.
That's the point. So you take out one from the pile, and you give it to them. What we're saying over here, then, according to the Rambam, is that we're talking about over here. So you have... one fig of truma fell into 100 of kulin. We're saying now it's bottled. At that point, what you would have to do is take one out and give it to the kohen,
regardless
which one. But what we're saying over here is that suppose that before you had a chance to do that, one of them fell into the yama bottle. Would you then have to take out one and give it to the kohen? Rava is saying that yes. Because Rish Lakish would say, when it comes to barrels, then one falls out, that's enough. You don't need anything further. You don't need to take out another barrel and give it to the Kohanim, because if one barrel falling into the water is very noticeable, and people will realize, when is it mutter? Only if one fell out. When it comes to figs, or other small things like that, it's not so obvious. People may think that it's mutter even without taking one out, so that even
one fig at a time.
No, we're talking about an individual fig. Individual fig. So you have one fell into 100. What we're saying is, even if one falls into the Yamagogo, that's not enough to make the mixture mutter to a Zoya. You also have to take out one more and give it to the Koya. That's what we're saying, because the difference is with barrels, it's a very obvious thing when a barrel falls out of 100. You had a space there which is now noticeable. Therefore, everybody will realize that the only way it becomes mutter to Zorim is either you take one out of the mixture and give it to, well, no, in the case of barrels, we said are not bottle anyway, but the only way it becomes mutter is one falling into the water, one falling out. When it comes to figs, that won't be obvious. One fig falling out, people don't notice. People are not going to realize that distinction between one fell out and one didn't fall out, Therefore, regardless, you have to take one out and give it to the cardinal. That's how.
Why is it important they know the Quran?
Because we want people to know the din. We don't want people to mistakenly think that if truma falls into cholin, then you're allowed into 100 times as much cholin, then you're allowed to eat it, and that's that. We want.
Then, well, let's just say that. Well, regardless, if we know this or not, we have to give an answer.
That's the point. That's what Rabbah is saying. That's exactly what Rabbah is saying. This that Rish Lakish says is mutter immediately when one falls in is only talking about large things like barrels, not small things like figs. Now, that's one way of understanding.
Why would you think that small things would be?
Because you would think Rish Lakish mentioned barrels, but maybe it means in general. Maybe it means, yes.
Because
he mentioned barrels. So Rabbah is saying it means specifically barrels, and we're going to see Rabbah. Yeah, he just disagrees with Rabbah, but wait. Anyway, the Shittim of Kubetis has a different understanding of the situation. We're talking about over here that the one fig fell into less than 100.
Okay.
So then what we're saying is, again, less than 100, the rule would be the whole thing becomes Meduma, the whole thing becomes also Tzarim because it's not bottled. What we're saying is, what Rabbah is saying is, even if afterwards one falls out of the pile and falls into the Yamagado, that won't be good enough to be massive. That won't be good enough to be masterated because
one
said, that one falls out. You can't, I mean, maybe you could say half the nuffle, but instead of nuffle, you could maybe say the one that fell out is the one that fell in. However, we're not going to do that because, again, people are not going to realize that distinction, and people are going to think that even if one fig falls into less than 100 of truma, even if nothing else falls out, I mean, the other way around, if one fig of truma falls into less than 100 of fallen, that the whole thing is mostly even without faith, even without anything falling out, and you don't want people to make that mistake. Therefore, says Rabbah, the Shlokish's heter will not work when it comes to figs. Rabbi Yosef, I'm asking the pain. No, Rabbi Yosef says, no, the same din applies to figs as it does to barrels. No. Because, kinfilosa, kachal yosa, the same rule as applies to it falling in to begin with and making the mixture and creating problems with the mixture, the same rule applies as far as taking it out when one falls out. He's not worried about what people are thinking. The same way as, the same way as one fig of truma falling into the pile of figs and heter is enough to create the problem in the first place, more than 100, less than 100, according to the different explanations. The same way, one falling out of them into Yamagogo should be enough to be master the rest of it without any further ado, without any distinction between barrels and figs.
So it depends where
it falls. Well, no, Rabbi Yosef is saying that it doesn't matter. Rabbi Yosef is saying the same way Rabbi Yosef is saying, Rabbah is saying it matters, Rabbi Yosef is saying not. The Rambam Paskins like Rabbah, I think there is a rule, I think, in Shas that says that in general, if I remember correctly, usually we do Paskin like Rabbah against Rabbi Yosef, although I don't remember that for sure. But in any case, you have some of the Mephoshim are Gurus over here instead of Rabbah, Rava, and Rava is later than Rabbi Yosef, and therefore the Halakha would be like him. So therefore there would be that distinction.
So the Halakha is what?
The Halakha would be that figs are different in that regard.
In that,
you need one to fall out, otherwise even if one falls out, you still have to take another one out and give it to the Kohenim, or if it fell into less than 100, then the whole thing is altered.
Because otherwise people
are going to make that mistake, right? Okay. Honorable Allah, Chavis Shal Truma Shenafla B'Kuf Chavis. How about another? Chavis Shal Truma, rather. Shenafla B'Kuf Chavis. Here's another case. One barrel of Truma fell into, or if Shittim HaKubetz has changed it to Shinnit Arva, and Rashi also has Shinnit Arva, that it got mixed in with 100 barrels. So again, now, Barrels aren't, never mind, besides the fact that barrels are noticeable, here we're not talking about anything falling out, but the point is barrels are cautious, they're a dovish of minion, they're not bottle, as we said before. But what can you do, and what can you do in order to fix up the situation? Peseach echad mehen, open up one of the barrels, because this that we said before, that barrels are not bottle, is specifically chavias stumas, it's sealed barrels. Once they're open, they don't have their chashivos anymore, then they can be bottle. So therefore, you can open up one of them. The notel hamena kadei dimua. You take out of that one barrel the amount for dimua. You take out the amount of dimua, meaning the mixture of chulin of truma and chulin. Meaning, in other words, again, whenever truma falls into chulin, we were just saying if you have 100 times as much chulin, the truma is bottle, but you need to take out an amount equivalent to the truma that fell in, meaning in this case 100, and give it to the kohen to compensate him for the truma that he would otherwise lose. So that's what it means. Then you have to take 100th of 101st, if you want to get technical, whatever, of this barrel, the shaita, and then you can drink the rest of the barrel. Because, again, once the barrel is open, then it's not, once the barrel is open. That, the word dimuaf, the process in Parshas Mishpatim says, Malayacha b'dimacha, loisa'acha, and dimacha over there means truma. So for that reason, when you have a mixture of truma and chulin, it's called meduma. And throughout the Mishnayos and truma, in various places in Tras, where it talks about the dinim of truma, that's what it's called. Dimua means a mixture of truma and chulin. If it's less than 100 times as much, then it's meduma, and it has the rule in it is therefore it's also to zorim, and all of it has to be sold to koyanim at the price of truma. And if you have at least 100 times as much chulin, then it's bottle, and then you have to take out some and then give to the koyanim to compensate them. But yeah. Gemai is something completely different. Gemai is an al. Gemai is perus of an amar oret, where we take it, we know for a fact that the amar oret separate out truma, that they're careful about, but we're not sure whether they separated out my tradition and my tashani and my tilan. So that gemai is an al. Dalad mem al here. This is more al than al. This is truma that got mixed into chulam.
We call
Zimua or Meduma is the more usual term for a face. Okay. Anyway, so that's what you do over here. No, that is, no, that's what we're saying. Again, if Truma falls into less than 100 times as much chulin, the whole thing becomes also tazari. If it falls into... Oh, it's called Zimua regardless. Right. Okay. Yeah. So what you do is, again, you open up one of the barrels, you take out 101st of it. So let's keep it simple. It's a 101 gallon barrel. So you take out 1 gallon of it, you give it to the kohen, and you can drink the rest. Yosef Rav Dimi v'kamal ala hashmaita. So Rav Dimi was sitting and saying over this discussion, this teaching. Amalei Rav Nachman. So Rav Nachman says, I don't understand that gama v'shoti kachazin hacha. It looks like that what I see over here is you're saying for lachchila you're allowed to just gulp it all down and drink it. What happened then in that case when we said before that chavias tumas that sealed barrels are never bottled? If you're telling me it's so simple, all you have to do is open up the barrel. Then why would we ever say what's the relevance of saying that sealed barrels are never bottled? Ella Ema, no, says Rav Nachman to him, you have to rather correct it as follows. Not you can open one of them, but niftacha achas mehen, if one of them was open unintentionally. So then you're not allowed voluntarily to, because that would be called mevatel issur l'chatchila, and you're not allowed to do that. You're not allowed to do something to be mevatel and issur. But like this, in most cases in halacha, you're not allowed to mevatel issur l'chatchila, right? Yeah, but that's nevertheless, though. Yeah. Nevertheless, though, that's still that. No, he's right, because Mevatlan is the Hakila. There's various ways in which a person conceivably could be Mevatlan and Isser. You could add more Hetter, for example. You could, in this case, you could open up the barrels and thus change them to a different state. That's the point, though, because it would be Mevatlan.
So why do you say it's not?
So it would be. That's why we're saying. That's why you can't open it yourself. But if it was open, then you take kedei dimua v'shoyta, and then you can drink from that.
So you're saying
you're not allowed to open it. But if it was open, then it's considered bottle. Yes. Now, and Rashi points out over here, or actually it's not inside Rashi, it's on the side over here from the Birkat HaZevach, it's also in Shifra Mekubetet, that in that case the chiddush is, you know. To begin with, you know that it's not that you have any reason to think. It's not that truma got mixed into one of these barrels. After all, what happened over here is one full barrel, got mixed in with a whole bunch of other barrels. So you would think, when you open one barrel, why should I even have to take out anything for the koyanim at all? After all, you know, half the nafal, the surah, called the parish, medoba parish, or whatever, we should assume this one came from the roiv. And therefore, that there's no truma in it at all. Why am I having to take out 1 gallon out of 101 and give it to the kohen? Nevertheless, that's what we're saying. You still have to do that. So the chiddush is not so much that you're allowed to drink from that barrel. The chiddush is that you have to. The point is, in other words, you don't. Remember, what got mixed in over here to begin with is a whole barrel. So you would think to say, in that case, well, this particular barrel that I opened, it's obviously not, there's not 1 gallon in it that's truma and 100 gallons that are full in. By definition, either this thing is all 101 gallons are truma, or all 101 gallons are full in. Why am I being told I have to take out 1 gallon and give it to the Kohanim? Nevertheless, that's what we're saying. Nevertheless, we are allowed... If the other, as each barrel, as it gets open, you can do the same thing. That's what we're saying. Each barrel, as it gets opened, you can't open them l'chatchila yourself, because that would be miraculous, and you can't do that. But each barrel, if it gets open, you do the same thing. You take out 1 gallon out of 101, give it to the kohanim. Eventually, if all of them get open, the kohanim will get their entire 101 gallon.
Right.
But that's
your non-Jewish servant. You
can't open it up. If it gets open, you would think that you should still say any given barrel that gets open, not necessarily is this the one of Truma. In fact, call the Potash Middle of the Potash. You say it presumably belongs to the majority, which were not Truma. Therefore, I should not have to take anything out and give it to the Kohen. No, we're saying nevertheless, that's exactly what you have to do. You have to take out 1 gallon of it and give it to the Kohen, and then you can drink the rest. That's what we're saying. Because that's what we're saying. Even though it was an actual full barrel that got mixed in there, and we're saying you're opening it and now it's bottled, nevertheless, we still don't want to deprive the Kohanim of their truma, and therefore we will tell you, each barrel, as it gets opened, take out from it to Degimua, and then you can drink the rest. Okay. Omer of Hoshia, so Rav Hoshia says, here's another din in this connection. Suppose you have 1 barrel of truma that got mixed into 150. Now that, again, should be more than enough to be mivatalit, except for the problem, again, that sealed barrels are not bottled. Now what happens? Suppose now 100 of the barrels were opened unintentionally. So now what happens is, you take out from them, you take out from among these 100 barrels the amount for dimua. So either you take one whole barrel, or you take a little bit from each barrel, whatever, you take enough to equal 1 barrel, the shoisa, and then you can drink the rest. And the chiddush of this part is, ushar asurin, the remaining 50 that are still closed, all remain also, even though you took out today dimua from 100 open ones. Nevertheless, what we're saying is the ones that are sealed remain usher ad shi'pasku until they get opened. And the point of Rav Oshia's thing is, the point of Rav Oshia's din, therefore, is lo yamrinin istura beruva iste. We do not say that the iser is somewhere among the groves, among the 100 out of 150 that were opened. Therefore, these remaining 50 shouldn't have a problem. We don't say that. There's a possibility that the iser may actually be in one of those 50 sealed ones, and being sealed, they're not bottled. Therefore, unless it gets opened inadvertently, then they will be also to drink. Now.
So here we're saying this way, and before we say...
So 1 second. So on Amar Aleph, we said something else. On Amar Aleph, we talked about the case with the rings. We had 60 versus 40. We said over there that if it came out of a 40, we should assume it's mutter, and when it comes out of a 60. So what's the difference? So you have some of the... So you have some of the Mephoshim learn, in fact, that Oshia is disagreeing with Rabbi Yehuda's din over there. But then you have, not necessarily, because you have some of the acronym points out there are distinctions. Among them, first of all, again, there we were talking about one kind of issue of a desire. Here we're talking about a different kind of issue, truma. Again, first of all, here we're talking about eating it, which is a double shiashma material in the sense that that koinim can eat it, you can sell it after all, whereas over there we were talking about having to destroy them. So it's a chumra that can't lead to a kula. But on the other hand, another distinction though is also over there to say that the ring that's author is in the majority brings about a chumra, means that therefore if one of those 60 falls into another group, then you have a problem. Here, to say that the one of truma is in the 100 that were open would lead to a kula. It would be saying that you could drink any of the 50 without any further issue.
The ring, would you say a chumra?
It comes out a chumra, right? Because it means that, therefore, if you assume that the ister is somewhere in one of the 60 rings, and then all of those 60, let's say, fell into another one, then you have a problem, because then we say that the ister is most likely to be in the 60 rings. On the other hand, here, if you say that the ister is in the majority, then it comes out a kula. You're trying to say that, therefore, I should be allowed to freely open the remaining 50 barrels and drink them, and that you can't do. To say that the iftar is in the roiv when it comes to be nakel, that you can't necessarily do. To say that it's in the roiv when it comes to a chumrah, that you can do. That's an answer that I think the folk not going to give.
So what I was thinking is that you take a ring out of the 40, you put it in a 1,000, then you put it in another 1,000.
That was another case of that was another, that is another answer. So yeah, that when we, no, but that was because we had different cases over there. You had a case over there, Shishim Lamakri Echad. You had the case over there where all 60 fell into another group. Not the case where one of the 60 fell in. Here we're talking about where all 60 fell into another group. And here, similarly, we're talking about is the one of Chuma in the 50. Okay.
So there's
part of it could be a difference between Avodah Zarah and Chuma, but part of it can also be whether saying that the Isser is among the Roiv leads to a Chumra or a Kula. There it leads to a Chumra. Here it would lead to a Kula. Okay. Then we can do that, but to lead to a Kula that you can. Right. Okay. All right. Now on to another topic. So now we're done for the moment with the whole issue of this. We've gone through all the various scenarios now, many of the different scenarios of Bissel. We said when something can be Bissel and when can be not. And now we're going to continue getting back with cases of on Mishnah. We had the first group in the Mishnah, animals that have to be put to death or left to die, as the case may be, Shara Miskol and Chatoi Samesis, that are mixed up with other ones. Now we're going to start on the second category, where the Mishnah gave a long list of things that are possible to be used as korbanos, but not things that are chayav iska. Where we said in that case we have to leave them all to graze until they develop a mum, and then we sell them and use the money to buy all the korbanos. So one of the ones so we started out here at Ve'avan Yerba. We had a whole bunch of ones. We had an animal that killed somebody, but there was only one edah, where there was only one aid. There was Ve'avan Yerba, Mukta, where it was designated for a korban, for Avodah Zarah, Nevad, etc. And one of the ones we had in the list was Treifa. We had that there was mixed in with them an animal that is Treifa, that has some kind of injury or some kind of condition or whatever that it's not going to live 12 months. So the question is, the Shlema Kula Lo Yodiyah. I can understand with all the other cases in the Mishnah, sure, it can happen. You can't know which one is which. There's nothing on an animal that's Yodiyah or Nirva or what have you to necessarily tell you that this was done. And the same thing with the other one. Ela'ai Shreifa, Hesedami. What's the scenario over here with the Shreifa? E Yodiyah, if you can recognize which one it is, if the Shreifa is obvious, Rashi gives a couple of examples. Let's say you have one that you could tell even before the animal was shechted, if the leg was cut off, if one of its legs was cut off above a certain point, above a certain joint, that we'll learn about in Kol Nes Hashem. So with an animal, a kosher animal's leg has three segments, because kosher animals, you know, have hooves, effectively they walk on their tiptoes. So they have three segments of their leg that correspond by us to the upper arm or upper leg, the lower leg or lower arm, and the palm of the hand or the sole of the foot. Here we're talking about the akuba we're talking about over here is the lowest one of those, the one that corresponds to our palm or our sole of our foot. So no, akuba therefore means that bottom leg and the means the joint between it and the next one. In kosher animals, then what you have is the upper joint faces forward like our knees do. The lower joint actually faces backwards if you have a look carefully.
Oh, the upper, like
yes, the upper joint, like corresponding to our elbow or our knee, faces forward in a kosher animal. In most kosher animals, you can't see it. So the Gemara is because it's usually hidden by the fat and the muscle and whatever of the body. The Gemara's expression for it in a few places is knegdeh begomel nicker. You can notice the corresponding joints in a camel because a camel has very long, skinny legs, and you can notice the true knee joint over there. The al-kubba that we're talking about over here actually is the lower joint, the hock it's called in English, which corresponds to our ankle or our wrist, and it actually bends backwards.
No,
that's the point. In a kosher animal, the leg basically goes like this.
And
in non-kosher animals, well, it depends. I mean, the ones that walk on their paws, for example, like cats and dogs, only have two long bones in their legs, same as ours. They only have a knee joint, they don't have a hock.
Okay, are you ready?
We
have a
cow
right here.
I don't know how clearly you can see anything in that picture, but all right.
Here's the top one.
It's just...
Okay, whatever. Let's save this discussion for Colin. And Colin will have diagrams, we'll have pictures, we'll have everything you could possibly want to know about animal analysis. The point is that. Okay. The point is that if an animal's leg is cut off above the arcuva, then that's an example where we make a chase. Another example that actually gives us is a hole in the membranes around the brain, the meninges. Whatever it is, then it's fairly obvious, and then of course you know that it's chase. But yeah. That's the question. Ideally, one is that the leg was cut off above a certain point, and the other is that there's a hole in one of the membranes of the brain. If that's the kind of chafer we're talking about, then it's very obvious, lay-civilishly. Take it out of the mix. The rest of them you know are not chafer, and you're good. Ela-yodale,
yeah.
And if it's something that you can't recognize, minoyodale, then how are you supposed to, then how did you know to begin with that this one was? There are many chafers that involve internal organs. So if you're talking about the kind of chafer that you don't know, that you're not going to know until it's chested, well then how did you know to begin with that it became chafer? That's the question. But what is the case over here that you have an animal which on the one hand is chafer, but on the other hand you can't, known to be chafer, but on the other hand once it's mixed in with others you can't recognize. And how is that possible?
So
they said in the yeshiva of Yanai, Hochab Mayaskinan, the case we can be talking about over here is when the Ian of Nekubas HaKoit Vidrus HaZim. Suppose you have the following animals were mixed together. You have one animal was pierced by a thorn. Now, where you can have, in other words, pierced by a thorn. So you have like this. When it comes to, we're going to learn in Kulin, we'll talk about these kinds of things. If an animal that was pierced by a thorn, piece of wood, whatever, the point is, something that got embedded into its skin and into its muscles, but not far enough to actually go through the body wall and into the body cavity. If it did, then the animal would actually be traceable. But if it stopped short of that, exactly what it sounds like. So the inside of the body, inside of the bones and skin and muscles and whatnot, you have the body cavity where all the internal organs are. That's called halala in Hebrew. So if the hole goes from the outside into the body cavity, then the animal is chafer. But if it doesn't, if it stops somewhere in the muscles or whatever, then it's still kosher. So you can have an animal that was pierced like that by a thorn or something sharp like that, but it didn't go far enough in for the animal to be chafer. Versus you have another animal that was clawed by a wolf. Now, there you have. Now, obviously, if the wolf's clawing, if it's clawed far enough to go into the body cavity, then the animal's chafer anyway for that reason alone. But, no, because the difference is, the drusa you can have, it can be chafer even if the injury did not extend that far in. Because the Gemara talks about in Kulin, we'll learn about it when we get to the dinner of chafers, that when you have a predator such as a wolf, when it claws an animal, it deposits some kind of poison or venom in the wound, and that can kill the animal. When the turtle says a boss about the paper, that's the kind of example that's talking about. That it got, now what kind of poison or venom do animals have under their claws? One explanation that I've seen is it may refer to like this: these animals have claws; they claw and kill and injure other animals. The bacteria, collects under their claws, and then therefore they dig into their victim's skin, into its muscles, and it's tetanus or bacteria, some kind of bacterial infection or whatever. The point is that, again, now you have two animals over here. Both of them have been externally injured, but one was by a piece of wood, the other was by a wolf. One is not chafer, so the other one is, and there you can have where you can't tell them apart.
Okay.
The wood wouldn't make it chafer unless it actually pierced all the way through the body wall. As opposed to the zaev, though the wolf or any other kind of predator will make it chafer even if its claws did not get all the way through the body wall, just got embedded into the skin. Yeah. So there you have. There you have an example.
But how would you recognize the wolf?
That's the point, in other words. So if you have an animal that you know was attacked by a wolf and the wolf sunk its claws into it, at that point, we have to assume that the animal is chased. Well, strictly speaking, what it is actually, what we would have to do is, after the animal is chested, we would actually have to check it. After the animal is chested, we would have to check and see whether there is flesh over there that shows signs of infection. If it is, then we say that the animal is chased because eventually that infection would eat away through the animal and kill it.
So essentially, would apply this if a rabid animal biting.
Biting actually is well. Okay. Right now we're not learning colon. Right now we're learning the bottom. Biting is actually a different thing. Biting does not necessarily make it chaser, again, unless it pierced through the body wall, because biting doesn't necessarily, obviously, if the animal's rabid, that's different. But if we're talking about a regular predator that's not rabid, biting doesn't necessarily deposit this kind of venom that we're talking about over here. It doesn't necessarily deposit that kind of tetanus, germs, or whatever. Okay, but fine, if you find evidence of it, yes. But, okay. So therefore, again, so you have an animal that was clawed by a wolf. You don't know now when it was clawed by a wolf. Same thing. No, come on. The point, we're not getting into the individual questions. We're mentioning wolves because they all can attack animals. That's the point. So you have an animal that you know was clawed by a wolf. You have another one that you know was injured by a thorn. And externally, you can't necessarily tell a difference. You're only going to be able to tell a difference after they're chested. And then you check and you find that one shows signs of an infection and the other one does not. So that's the example that we could talk about here.
When we
give this example in our Mishnah, where Shefa was mixed in with animals of Karbanim. So you can have that some of them were injured by thorns, one of them was injured by a wolf. The one that was injured by a wolf, there's a likely chance that it's Shefa. So the only way that might be not is if afterwards shecht it and we check and we don't find any sign of infection. But you can't bring it into the Azara to shecht it in the first place, where you don't know, it might be Shefa, and you can't bring it into the Azara to also rid of the carbon. So there you have, but that's the point. In other words, there you have two animals that you can't tell the difference between. The Shlokish says, I'll give you another explanation. So when the Arab bin Fula, here's an example. If you have an animal, here's another gene of Tracis, which again we'll talk about extensively in Kulin Vesem. If you have an animal falls off a roof or some other height, we have to be concerned that if the animal can't stand afterwards, we have to be concerned that it might be chafer. It's called risuke evorim. Its internal organs may have been crushed or damaged in the fall. So what happens is, therefore, so even if the animal is able to stand up, you can't, if you were to shaft, if you can't, even if you shaft it right away, no good. You would have to wait 24 hours. And then check it, and then check whether any of the internal organs were actually damaged. So you have the same problem again. It's a stoppage today, so you can't bring it into the azotic check it. But externally, you might not be able to notice the difference between it and other animals. So there's another example. So the question is the fully nami libdica. The question is, so what's the problem? Why do you have to leave the animals till they develop a womb, etc.? Just check it and see if any internal organs were damaged. Not check the internal organs, but see if it actually walks. Now you have a machloikas, it actually points out over here based on the Gemara and Cholin, you have a machloikas. When you have an animal that falls off a roof like that, one way of looking at it is that if the animal stood up, that if the animal was able to stand after the fall, but it couldn't walk, then fine. You don't have to wait 24 hours in order to check it. But after you check it, you do have to check the internal organs. On the other hand, if it walks, then you don't need anything at all. The fact that it walks shows that everything is intact. That's one opinion. If you take that view, then all you need to do is wait until it walks. That's what you mean, Lizica. Not check the internal organs. See that it's able to walk, and then you know it's good. The answer is
what's the expression?
Libdica, Nifulanami libdica. Let's check it, meaning by seeing whether it's able to walk. The answer is no, because the Shlokish holds according to the other opinion. On the Tzricha Metzlas, the Shlokish holds according to the other opinion in Chulin over there, which is that if the animal stands up, it's not good enough. You cannot check it right there on the spot. You need to wait 24 hours. And Holcha Tzricha Bidika, and even if it's able to walk, you still, even after checking it, you still have to check the internal organs. So therefore, according to him, you're back to the thing. Therefore, you can't bring this thing to the Azara and check it and then check its internal organs.
Because that would wait.
So never mind waiting. If it walks, then that's the point. If it walks, you still need bedikah of the internal organs. Just the fact that it walked, if you enter Rishlokish, is not enough. Therefore, you're back to, you can't bring it into the Azara, because you can't shecht it, and you can't bring it into the Azara to shecht when it might be a, when it might be a selfish tereza. Rav Yirmiyah says, I'll give you a third explanation. Because when the ear of this lad tereza, you can have that the tereza of our Mishnah is not the animal itself as a tereza, it's a vlad, a baby born to a tereza mother. And Rav Eliezer, now our Mishnah, therefore, would be specifically, according to Rav Eliezer, Yom of Vlad Trefa Layikra Vagabi Mizbeah. He holds that the baby of a Trefa animal cannot be offered on the Mizbeah. Because effectively, what he considers is that the baby, it, to that extent, is considered part of the mother.
If the pregnant cow falls.
Falls or whatever, gets injured in any other way, yeah. Gets clawed by a wolf or whatever. And afterwards it gives birth, Rav Eliezer would say, the blob is fossil. But on the other hand, the fat is for a carbon. On the other hand, you can't see any difference in that blob from any other creature, from any other animal. Yeah. Okay, so we have three answers. So we have to ask, why did each of these Amirayim have to find a different answer? Kulu could have Yanai like Amri, Rish Lakish and Rav Yirmiyah didn't accept Rav Yanai's answer that we're talking about. You couldn't tell the difference between whether it was clawed by a wolf or whether it was injured by a piece of wood. Because they say, Ben the Kovas Akkoi, the Jerusalem has made the idea. You can very well tell the difference between a piece of wood and a clawing of a wolf. High Moshech, the high Ogil. An injury by a wolf would be a long thing, would be a scratch, because the wolf would claw like that. And the other one, the injury by a piece of wood, would be round, because it would have been something that goes straight in.
Okay.
To the Shlokish layout.
Well,
you could, but okay, you could, but Rav Yanai figures that you do have that possibility. Rav Shlokish and Rav Yirmiyah say that it's very unlikely that you should be able to tell the difference. To the Shlokish Loyami, they also don't, Rav Yanai and Rav Yirmiyah don't want to say like the Shlokish is understanding, that we're talking about the case where the animal fell off a roof, and we're saying that even after it walks, they have to check it, because they hold it one to the other opinion. Omda in a tzricha mesles, as long as the animal is able to stand up, you don't need to wait 24 hours. That's the other opinion, which is in fact the halacha.
That's
according to Rav Yanai and Rav Yirmiyah. So they say, you can't say that the tereza of our Mishnah is one that fell off the roof and was able to walk and you still need to check it, because they hold omda in a tzricha mesles. If the animal is able to stand up after the fall, you don't need to wait 24 hours. You do need to check the internal organs after you check it, though. But a holka, but they say if it's able to walk, then you don't even need that. In a tzricha bdika, you don't even need to check the internal organs. The fact that it's able to walk shows that it's healthy. So therefore, according to them, you don't have a case where the animal fell off a roof and you can't tell between it and the other animals, because as long as it can walk, as long as it's either one or the other, right. And could Rav Yirmiyah, like Amri, and Rav Yanai, and Rish Lakish don't want to use Rav Yirmiyah's answer that our Mishnah goes according to Rav Eliezer, because Rav Eliezer might make me. They don't want to say that a Stam Mishnah goes according to Rav Eliezer. They would rather say it goes according to everybody. The fact that the halacha usually is very rarely like Rav Eliezer. No, there are, but it's very rare. I don't know any numbers, but in general, the halacha is not like Rav Eliezer anyway. We usually say in various places in Shas, Rav Eliezer Shamuti. So he was Talmud of Bishkamai, and he was put in Cherem. Shamuti has a double meaning. It means that he Tosfos discusses it in Nida and in other places. It means that he was Talmud of Bishkamai, or it also means that he was excommunicated. That's the famous story of Tanner Shas. Onwards. Yeah, it's actually a very sad story when you get down to it. All right. We learned from Sanhedrin also what Rabbi Eliezer himself said before he passed away, that there's so much that I know and never had a chance to give over because nobody bothered asking any of the things that I know, and Muhammad stayed away, and even Rabbi Akiva only asked him some things, and then Muhammad would stay away from him for many years. Yeah. Okay. Well, he had his reasons. Okay. He had his reasons for why, for what he did, what he did.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, indeed. It was a Maholik with Hashem Shemayim. Okay, let's go.
Yeah, but we're still there.
Yeah. All right. The Mishnah continued, Kodshim b'Kodshim min b'min. We had then the next case of the Mishnah, where all the animals that got mixed together are Kodshim, and we said in that case, then we offer them on behalf of whoever the owner is. We said, according to Rashi over there, what it means is you actually say that I'm doing it on behalf of whoever the owner is, and this one on behalf of whoever the owner is. Tosfos disagreed with that, and Tosfos said that it just means he's makir them stam without having anybody in mind at all. Anyway, the question is, well, boy, smicha. The question is, how can you do that? Doesn't most korbanos require smicha? The owner has to lean his hands on it before the korban is offered, and here you can't do that because you don't know who the owner is, and you can't just say that both of them should be smicha on it, because whichever one doesn't need to do smicha is going to be doing avoida, is going to be doing work with kardashim, because you have to lean on them with your whole strength. So what are you going to do? Choice just gets into a very long discussion over here about different places in Shas, where we seem to say that it is important that a korban has to have smicha, and otherwise you can't be makriv it, versus other cases where we seem to say that it's okay to be makriv a korban even without smicha. Choice just mentions, for example, you have, for example, certain people who can't come into the bet mitzvah. An oral or a tome are still allowed to send korbanos to the bet mitzvah to be offered, even though they can't do smicha on them. Tosfos gets into a very long discussion about all the ins and outs of that. Among others, Tosfos says you could have the possibility that you have a case where smicha can't be done because the owner is unsuitable for it. For example, he's an oral or a chame or what have you. So fine, then we would say smicha is not active. Versus over here, where smicha was originally supposed to be done, the owner was perfectly capable of doing smicha, and the problem is that the korbanos got misjudged. Maybe then we're going to insist on smicha, and then without that, we can't bring it. Okay. Amar of Yosef, sort of Yosef says, the answer is the korban noshim. You have to be talking about that the case of our Mishnah is talking about the korbanos that got mixed up, our korbanos of women. Now, you have two different opinions in Tidushin and some other places. Is it that everybody agrees that women are not obligated to do smicha? You have one opinion that says that they're not allowed to, because again, it would be doing avodah b'kodeshim. And you have another opinion, I think it's your mayor versus Rabbi Yehuda, but I don't remember, that says, one of them says they're not allowed to, and the other one says, noshim sonchus reshut. If they want, they can be sonchus. The halacha, if I remember correctly, is actually that they can't. Be that as it may, the point is they don't have to do smicha. Everybody agrees to that. So therefore, that's what we're talking about over here. Therefore, these korbanos don't need smicha. So it's no problem being matched with them on behalf of whoever the owner is without that owner doing smicha.
Because they're women.
Because women don't have to do smicha. And according to one opinion, they're not even allowed to. So the Gemara says, "Alav korban anoshim lois." You're telling me then that if these korbanos that got mixed up were men's korbanos, then you would have a problem and you could not be matched with them. Eis the Abaya. So Abaya asks son of Yosef. I have a contradiction from the following brisa. The implication of the following brisa, once we finish learning it, the implication of it is that even korbanos of men that got mixed up, you could be matched with, even though you don't have smicha. The brisa says like this. Korban yochid shenis out of the korban yochid. If you have a korban of one individual that got mixed up with a korban of another individual, the korban sibur shenis out of the korban sibur, or a korban of the sibur that got mixed up with another korban of sibur, the korban yochid the korban sibur shenis out of zebuzet, or a korban of an individual and a korban of sibur that got mixed up together. And Rashi gives an example. Now, normally, many korbanos of a yochid are female animals. Those can't possibly get mixed up with korbanos of sibur, because all korbanos of sibur are male animals. But Rashi says it could be an individual's oila, or it could be the chassas of the king, the sar nasi, which is a male animal. Whatever, you can have such cases. In all those cases, the Braita says, noisen galad matonis mikol achad ve'achad. What you do is, you do four matonis on the mizbeach from each one. Four matonis, if it was this or with chatois, or shtei matonis shein arba, if we're talking about olos or whatever. The im noisen matonis mikol achad, we're actually going to have a machlokas later on, and we're actually going to have a machlokas between Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yeshua later on in our parak. When you have blood that's mixed together, how many times should you apply it to the mizbeach? But we'll deal with that later. For right now, the braisa is saying that you apply four matonis, or shtei matonis shein arba, from each one. The imnasa matona mikol echad yasa. If you only did one matona from each one, then you're yosa. Because, as we learned earlier in the Masechta, according to the civil, which is alaka, even by a chasap, all you need is one matona. And the imnasa arba mikol echad yasa. Also, if you did four from each one, you're also yosa. Now, on the face of it, we don't need that. Rashi doesn't seem to be good at it. Shikimukovetis discusses that maybe we don't need that. Because if you're saying that even one is enough, what would be the point of mentioning all four?
Well, you're talking about one that only needs one and you did four anyway.
No, so what we're saying is, in other words, if it's just one, if you just need one, there's no reason to mention that to mention that you need four. That you did four, right. So
if you did four on Shlomim only needs one?
Shlomim needs Shem upon a Shenaga. Chor Meister and Pesach needs one.
Okay, so if you did four on a Mike.
So we actually have a machlokas Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yeshua later on in our Perek, whether in that case if you have blood of a Pesach, let's say, that was mixed with blood of a Shlomim, what do? You do one matana of it or do you do two or whatever? And you have a machlokas over there. It's not a question of whether the korban will be kosher or not. We established earlier in the Masechta that one matana is enough for all korbanos for the Eved. The machlokas is basically, do you want to do only one and then that, because otherwise you're going to be over on Baal Tosif, or do you want to do two in order that, because otherwise you're already around Baal Tigra? I said, we'll see later. It's a machlokas Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yeshua.
But then doing four on it might be even worse than doing one that needs four, because you'll need Baal Tigra.
That's the point. That's the machlokas. That's the machlokas later on, Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yeshua. No. Yeah, but the point is, then. Yeah, maybe. You have a couple of acronyms talking to find various ways to find for it. It seems that maybe what it is, you have different kisve yad. One mention imnotan matana achat, and the other mention imnotan dal matanas, and the pointer is just combine them together. All right, anyway, whatever. Fine. Okay. Vamed gor mamurim continues the braisa. When is all this talking about? Shinis arvu chayim. When the animals got mixed up while they were alive. Avon is arvu shchutin. But if they got mixed together only after they were shechted, which means then, we're saying that it means that the blood of two or more korbanos was mixed in one mizrach. So then, noisen arum matonis mikol, and then you should do four matonis from all of them, because then you have some of these korbanos require four, and some of them require less, and you have, again, Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yeshua later on discussing whether you should do one or whether you should do four. So our Braita is saying over here that you should do four. But if you only did one, you're yoytze, because again, this still says that one is enough. Rashi points out over here, you do have to say that it's enough to do four matanas from the mixture. You have to say, therefore, that we're following the rule over here called yesh bila. Yesh bila means that when you have things mixed together, in this case, different types of blood, that we assume they got perfectly mixed together to the extent that any blood you take out of that basin is that every drop of blood you might take out of there has a bit of both in it. If you were to say they didn't fully mix properly, then not necessarily. If you did four matanis from this, not necessarily. Conceivably, you might get all the blood might be from one carbon and none from the other one. Only if we say yesh bila does it work. Okay. Rebbe says what you have to do, royana samafana, you have to consider how much blood was applied to the mizbeach by each of these matanis. In yeshba kedelo zev kedelo zeksheira, if you applied enough blood each time that it would have been enough individually for each one, then kshedah, then the korban is kosher, game la psula. And if not, it's possible, because then you can't consider that blood was applied enough for both korbanos.
How can you determine that from the?
You would determine basically how much would you need in order for it to be visible on the side of the mizbeach. With the matonis, we said earlier, you can have experience in it. You know, I mean, they know in the case of a chatos, for example, how much blood comes off their finger onto the mizbeach, and the same thing with the shtem upon the shenab or whatever. Yeah, so he's saying, if you had, for example, if let's say it takes a minimum of an ounce of blood to be able to have enough blood visible on two sides of the mizbeach, and you did only exactly 1 ounce of this, then you're no good, because then you don't have enough for both. And if you had done them each individually, it would only be half an ounce. Okay. Fine. So now, thus far the braisa. So now let's analyze it, says Abaya. Katoni yochid yumya desibur. Now let's consider. The braisa is mentioning the case where you have a korban of a yochid mixed with another korban of a yochid, or a korban of a yochid mixed with a korban of a sibur. So, mas sibur gadri af yachid gadri. On the face of it, the sibur consists of or includes males, so therefore the korban of the yachid also has to be talking about korbanos of males. Well, okay, so you have, the logic is that, so it's interesting actually, you have, there's a sefer that came out 200 odd years ago called the Samim Rosh. It, on the title page, it was claimed that these are chuvas from the Rosh that had been in manuscript and were published, and this is now, you know, what, 400 or 500 years after the Rosh had passed away. A number of the Rabbanim at that time found reasons to question whether it's really so, and that it might actually be a forgery. So some Rabbanim of that time accepted this paper, the Samim Rosh. Is it genuinely Chuvas from the Rosh or not? In one of those Chuvas, he discusses the idea that among other things, based on our Gemara, that maybe what the Gemara is saying over here is that women actually do not have a share in the Karbonis Sibur because they don't give Matzah Shekel, and that Matzah Shekel is used to buy the Karbonis. He discusses that as far as he discusses that in connection with the question of women davening Musaf. So he wants to say, therefore, that based on this, that when we say the Sibur is men, that's what it means. Only men give Matzah Shekel.
And if a woman gives Matzah Shekel,
I think they accept it, but they're not required. No, if that if one particular woman does, fine, but they're not required to. Right? But anyway, Rav Akiva Eger apparently was one of the ones who took the Samim Rosh as genuine, because he quotes this concept in one of his Chuvas and discusses the implications of it in Halacha. So that's one way of understanding is what Or Gemara means is that the Sibur consists of men, because men are the ones who have to give Matzah Shekel, whereas women are not obligated to, and not necessarily did most of them do that. The other way of understanding, if you don't accept that, is of course women have an equal share in the Korbanos Sibur, but the fact is the Korbanos Sibur, the Sibur does include men as well. So therefore, by implication, the Korbanos of the Yachid, if we're saying that the Korbanos of the Yachid are similar to the Korbanos of Sibur, then we have to be, we can be talking equally well about Korbanos of men, which requires smicha. And Rashi points out, now when it comes to Korbanos of Sibur, only a few of them require smicha, and those aren't the ones that we're dealing with over here, because those are all like Hatori Tapin. You don't have any Korban Sibur that's brought on the outer Mizveah, which is where we're saying that you can get that requires smicha, and here we're talking about ones that are on the outer mizbeach, because ones on the inner mizbeach we learned earlier in the text of those matana achas and makavas. You have to do every matana. But therefore Rashi points out that's why Abaya has to point out that though if we're putting together over here yachid and sibur, the implication is the karbonis of yachid we're talking about include karbonis of males, which requires smicha, and yet the Braita doesn't seem to have a problem with them, and they got mixed up alive, and you go ahead and omakru them, and you go and apply the blood to them there. So obviously, therefore, you don't require smicha. So what is Rav Yosef? That's a Abaye is asking Rav Yosef. Rav Yosef was arguing that our Mishnah that says you have korbanos of people that got mixed up, and you can be makru with them, applies only to korbanos of women. Korbanos of men, Rav Yosef is saying you would have a problem because you require smicha. Abaya is saying the implication of this braisa that we just quoted is even korbanos yochid of men, which do require smicha, you can be makru with them if they were mixed up. You have no problem. The fact that you can't do smicha. You can be makru with them, and you apply them one or four times to the mizbeach, as the case may be, and we're not worried about smicha, says Abaya. Aba Rava, so Rava answers, so what are you thinking, Abaya? You're thinking that the wording of this braisa is correct. There's obviously a different problem with this Mishnah, with this braisa anyway. There's a problem with this braisa anyway, because the braisa says, and the braisa has said that when does this apply, when they were mixed up while they were alive, where then we're saying that you do four matanis from each one. But if they were mixed up after they were shechted and they were mixed up in the cup over there, then we say loy. Then we say that you do four matonis from all of them. The question is mali chay and mali shchutin. The question is in that case, what would be the difference whether they were mixed up while they were alive or not? Either way, you're still saying that either way you do four matonis. You do four matonis from each one, and if you did only one, then you're yosa. You could have, in other words, the same distinction could be among shchutim themselves. You could have a distinction because you have within shchutim, you can have two possibilities. One is where you have different cups or different containers of blood, and you mixed up which one was which one came from this turban, which one came from that turban, versus when they all got mixed into one big basin. And either way, the gin is still going to be the same. Why would the braisa be bothering to make a distinction between chayim and shchutim? So there's obviously a problem with this braisa anyway. Ela hachikama, therefore, says Rava, you have to say that the braisa means as follows. When is it talking about that? When is it talking about that? You need four matanis from each one. Machila is when they were mixed up after they were shechted, but it's similar to something that it's similar to them being alive. In other words, in a sense, when they're alive, each one stands on its own. You have a mixture over there. You don't know which one is which, but each one is a physically separate animal. Shchutin ke'en chayin would also mean where they're physically separate. You have physically separate cases of blood. You just don't know which is the equivalent of the animals being alive and not knowing which is which. That's when the Braita is saying that you do four matanas from each one l'chila. That's the proper thing to do, is four matanas from each one. But if they were mixed together in one cup, noisen dalad matonis v'kula, and then you do four matonis out of that mixture, avot bim noisen matonis v'kula and yosa, and if you did only one matonis from it, then you yosa. The point is, says Rava, this braisa has nothing to do with the whole issue of animals being mixed up while they were alive. The braisa is talking about that the braisa is not addressing a case where they were mixed up while they were alive. When they were mixed up while they were alive, in fact, maybe, like Rabbi Yosef is saying, you can't be mixed with them because you can't do smicha on them. After they were shechted, and already smicha is a non-issue, then you have a distinction between whether it's that you mixed up which basin is which, or all the blood was poured into one basin, and therefore it's all mixed together.
But nothing
to do with when they were alive, nothing to do with them getting mixed up when they were alive, where then you would be dealing with the issue of smicha. So this braisa that you, Abaya, are bringing is no proof against Rabbi Yosef. You could understand it your way, fine, but you could equally well understand that it's talking about two cases that both occurred after the animals were shechted, nothing to do with them being alive, and therefore it's not a contradiction. That is it. Okay, so the Gemara continues. Let's go through the end of the brain. So Rebbe Omer Royna Samatana. We said Rebbe says that when it comes to, you're saying that you do a matana, or one or more matanas from this basin of blood, but Rebbe says you have to look at how much blood was actually applied to the mizbeach. Im yeshva kadelo zev kadelo zek shera. If you have that the amount of blood that was put on the mizbeach would have been enough individually for each of the two korbanos, then it's kosher. Vim lav kula, and if not, then it's possible because you don't have enough for any individual one. The question is, me isle the Rebbe high swara? Does Rebbe really hold of such a swara? That there may not be enough. Vahatanya, but we learn in a braisa. Now later on in our perek, we have a case as follows. The case actually comes from a Mishnah in Para. If you have a container of Para Dumal, which is going to be sprinkled on people or on things that became tongue. Let's say some regular water spills in there. Can you use that water or not? So Rabbi Eliezer says, yes, what you can do is, if you have a kosher, if you have a tiny amount of some other water fell in there. Rabbi Eliezer says, fine, what you do is, from now on, for any hazah that you're doing from this container, do two hazahs instead of one. The reason is, because we say Rebbe says the reason is because Rabbi Eliezer holds there's no minimum amount for hazah. There's no minimum amount that actually has to land on the person. In other words, Rashi explains like this: if we were to say that you need a minimum shear, then you would. So even if you say yesh bila, even if you say that the mixture is that the one drop perfectly mixed with everybody else, but you may not have the full shear in each individual hazah. But if we say that you don't need a minimum shear in each other, even if one molecule of the mechak that lands on the person, then you're good, then fine, you do two hazahs. Even if one hazah was all mayim acherim, the other one is going to have at least one molecule in it of the mechak, and therefore you're good. And Rebbe says that's what it means. L'divir Rebbe Eliezer, hazah, kulturum ataharet, according to Rebbe Eliezer's way of looking at it, any amount of hazah, you don't need any minimum amount to land on the person in order, or the keli, in order for him to be tahor. Hazah in a tzricha shir, hazah does not require, there's no minimum shir for it.
Some of it must land,
but there's no minimum amount that must land, as long as even though it could be one molecule. Hazah mechta kosher or mechta posel, and so you can have a hazah where the water in it is half kosher and half posel.
Not
that we're saying, but That's the point. If you had a drop of regular water, non-cardiodromal water mixed in there, you might have, when you dip the azas in and sprinkle, and a drop lands on the foreskin, if you were to analyze that drop, you might find that half of it came from the cardiodromal water, and the other half came from the original water. But it's possible. There's no reason. Why is it almost impossible?
Because, I mean,
it depends, but how long does it take to mix up? It doesn't mix up right away. If we say yesh bila, then yes, but we don't necessarily, we can't, in, for
so
certain,
that means it mixes up.
Yesh bila means that we assume it's perfectly mixed. That ein bila would mean that we can't necessarily say that. There might be a certain amount of the non-cardiodromal water that temporarily is suspended in one place.
22 degrees under zero, then...
Fine. We're not talking physics over here. We're talking total physics. You could say it that way. I mean, okay, you know what? You can have Maxwell's demon. You want to talk physics. You can have Maxwell's demon moving the molecules of water to where they belong, right? You know, come on.
Okay. What about if you're in Israel and the drops that some part of the world was just evaporated just like that? Is it so hot?
That is, actually, according to the Chachamim, if any water gets mixed in there, it's possible because the Chachamim disagree with this concept anyway. And they say, even for example, if dew falls into it, it becomes fossil. Even though Rabbi Eliezer argues that dew will evaporate, the Chachamim don't accept that. Okay, anyway, the point is, getting back to, Rebbe is saying that according to Rabbi Eliezer, there's no minimum amount for Hazar. So even if the particular drop of Hazar included some of the non-cardiodromal water, then you're still good because there's no minimum amount. Yeah, fine, but so the question is, Rebbe apparently is saying that apparently accepts Rebbe Eliezer's opinion. So why is Rebbe saying in our Braita that you need
a...
Why is Rebbe saying in our Braita over here regarding the blood that you need a minimum amount from each one?
If he agrees with
Rebbe Eliezer. So the answer is he doesn't necessarily agree with Rebbe Eliezer, which is part of the Rebbe Eliezer comment. First of all, he might be clarifying what Rebbe Eliezer holds. He doesn't necessarily have to hold that way. Or another possibility, Hazal Lachod and Nesin Lachod. Maybe when it comes to Paradrum and water, he'll even accept Rabbi Eliezer's opinion, but he won't say. The Gemara's assumption for purposes of the question was that the same thing that Rebbe and therefore Rebbe would say regarding Hazal, Paradrum, they would also apply to sprinkling blood of Karbana. Not necessarily. Rebbe might say that by Paradrum and water is one thing, but Nesinus Dam on the Mizeah, you need, after all, a minimum amount. You need enough blood to be visible on the two sides of the Mizeach, and therefore, if you didn't have enough, then it's no good. But
is Paradrum
not considered carbon? No, it's not actually, but it has certain dinim of carbon, but for the most part, it's not considered a carbon. No. Okay, one more thing. Tosfos points out, by the way, that Rabbi Eliezer is saying you don't need a shear for Hazar, is we're talking about the amount that lands on the person. Everybody agrees you do need a minimum amount in the keli that you're dipping into. You have to have enough for the tip of the azos to go into the water. But we're talking about how much has to land on the person.
Three.
But you need enough water in there for them to be able to go in. It is very minimal, but the point is, if you have any less than that, it's no good. But when Rabbi Eliezer is talking about how much lands on the person, agaba de gaba, it's called, how much lands on the person, he says even one molecule is enough.
Atomic amount.
Yeah.
Molecule, then an atom is not enough.
If you have a molecule of water and it's getting split up into atoms on the way to landing on the person, he's probably going to get a severe burn from the energy that came and disassociating the water molecule. Come on.
Sure.
All right.
Which particle splitter are we using?